my title had changed slightly to show you I was listening to what I heard yesterday, to minorities and violent radicalisms, because we were reminded yesterday that it's all right on PC to be radical. However, if you are violently radical, that is not polite. In fact, it is not to be welcomed, and we want to figure out how people can exit. Now, one thing I want to do, I think would apply to many of the other terms we have used, including the nice neutral term of exiting violence. And as you know from following what Americans do, we never mention, official America never mentions, forget about our president, please, never mentions religion in any way. One uses more neutral language, but one thinks about religion. Now, most of us can agree, in a general way, about what minorities are. Just to remind you of the way I would define the notion, it would be a group of people who, because of their physical or cultural characteristics, that doesn't lead very much in the world, are singled out from other people for different and unequal treatment, and who might regard themselves as objects of collective discrimination, but they might also be objects of privilege. Think of the beautiful British term, positive discrimination. If you are identified as a certain type of minority, you get special privileges. The same thing happens in the United States with affirmative action, except you have a conjuncture of things that makes the term more interesting. One is self-identification, which can change over time. Let's give the Muslim world a break for a moment. There's a tribe in South Carolina, these days, of Native Americans, which I especially like to cite, because since the time of the American Civil War, depending on ways in which they could get more privileges, the Lumbee tribe has collectively identified as African American, as white, didn't last long, as Native American, lasted longer, and each time they would go to the state legislature of South Carolina or get overruled by the federal government to redefine themselves in order to get more entitlements. Very good. Or another example, this also somewhat dated, Senator Claiborne Pell, who established a program to help people who did not have much money to be able to pay for higher education. The program has been dismantled now, because now we are making America great again, which means eliminating support for higher education. But in the state of Rhode Island, this New Englander from a distinguished family had 15,000 Portuguese fishermen from the Azores Islands. So part of our affirmative action is for African Americans, people with Hispanic surnames. Why Hispanic surnames? Because Puerto Ricans don't like Mexicans and others, and therefore the language is not, it goes to language, if you're Spanish surname. Now, if you happen to be a Mexican Jew with the name Michael Levin, there's ways that you can say you still have a Spanish surname and get privileges as well. But 15,000 Portuguese fishermen from the Azores Islands, not from Lisbon, not from Porto, or anywhere else, also get the privileges of preferment for federal employment and various other things. So my point, which is a point that applies to the Muslim world as well, is that you can have a bottom-up identification as a minority, self-identification as such, negotiated with other people, or you can have a top-down negotiation of some sort with international pressures or with pressures within a country itself. And historically, things change. Somebody yesterday made the very important point that when we are talking about religious groups and other groups, we should also think locally as well and not try to impose, even if some people do, the idea that all Muslims or all of anybody else deal in the same way. Now, there is a way, I think, that we can constructively think about minorities and some of the other terms we use. There's an Oxford philosopher, some of you might know, Walter Gallic, who has a useful term, essentially contested concepts. I would argue that minority is one of these terms. For that matter, radical is as well. But let me stick more with talking about minorities. This is something where you can agree what the phenomenon is. Let's talk about minorities, which is what I'm supposed to do today. But then there will be a disagreement as to what constitutes a minority. Galli, like most philosophers, chooses the most simple of ways of discussing essentially contested concepts, a soccer game. You might like the team from Tunis because of their style of playing. They might lose the game, but they play with such style. And somebody else will say, no, I prefer a different team, the team from Algiers, perhaps, because they win all the time. And winning is what counts. The two groups are never going to agree, style versus the sheer brute force of winning more often in the terms of the game. However, both groups agree that the game is called soccer. Identifying as minority is very much the same sort of thing. One can argue that it's something that is constructive. There are cases, for instance, in North African history of people having protege status, where you could negotiate being part of a given group so that you could assume or get the privileges of being protected by a foreign power. And then those privileges could be taken away. In Algeria, Jews were citizens of France. And let us not forget the fiction that Algeria was never a colony. It was an integral part of France, at least for some people. But Jews also found that their privileges as citizens of France were taken away from them at a certain period of time. Now, coming to the Muslim world, and my examples will deliberately be more anchored in the present. But in the present, people often are compelled to use what they think about what happened in the past. The notion is that there is one tie that Muslims have, which is between individuals, which makes the Quran very unique, in my mind, from the 7th century, and God. And that is, if I remember the Quranic phrase, al-urwa al-wuthqa, the firmest tie, the tie that binds a believer with God. For me, the interesting notion of this idea, it doesn't deny ties based on race, color, language, where one's born, or other characteristics, but it enabled one to understand the flexibility with how groups are constructed. Ibn Khaldun, I think, got this term right in thinking about Asabiyya, which for a long time at least in English, was mistranslated as group feeling and tied to whether one was a nomad or an urban settled, because the basic sense of the term is when you have a group acting as if they have strong ties, then that group works. And the emphasis there is as if, majazi, if you wish, a metaphor. But metaphors can have very powerful force in society. Now, in that sense, the word minority, like radical, is an observer's term. The most radical people in the American judiciary are called strict constructionists, those who believe that they can, for the current situations, know exactly what their 18th century predecessors meant by certain terms. This is an amazing historical feat to be able to reconstruct all of the implicit assumptions from 250 years ago. But one gets that, for instance, with the earlier forms of Sati, who believe that you can reproduce everything from the exact way that the prophet trimmed his beard to the questions of how people are operating. Let me take a number of examples of minority and see the way that matters are dealt with. I'll use a couple of examples in passing, and I caution you that I'm very quickly going to use examples and just draw a couple of experiences from them to make the general point that in speaking about minorities, even if we use the language of sociology, we really are talking about situations where we have to know history and local contexts in order to understand them. So let's start with the so-called easy sort of situation, Saudi Arabia. The guardian of the two holy places. It's always interesting to think about the role of the Shia in Saudi Arabia, because the Saudis don't like to think about it unless they're using bulldozers to tear down dangerous places that just happen to be occupied by Shia. 10 to 15% of the native population, which leaves all of the workers out, are Shia in the country, and they are subject to severe discrimination in most things, in terms of school, freedom of movement, and all sorts of things. Intermarriage is a good sign of where the fault lines are, and I can be challenged on this, but I think the number of Shia who marry non-Shia in Saudi Arabia is limited to the point of about zero. In other places, being minority increasingly means less. Let's take the Sultanate of Oman, where in official discourse, everybody is equal. And the Mufti of the country, who is of Zanzibari origin, against all odds, is a friend of mine and will speak off record as he said to me, after the first 25 years, if you keep coming back, then I'll talk to you, is the Mufti of everybody, the Imamia, and nobody ever mentions, almost never mentions, the role of the Ibadi in Islam. The Sunni, located traditionally in certain areas, and a small but significant number of Shia. Or as the Minister of Religious Affairs of the country said, I said, why did the ministry's name get changed from Wizarat Ilaqah wal Sha'un Islamiyya to Ilaqah wal Sha'un Diniyya, from Islamic affairs to religious? He thought about it and he said, well, we have about 200 Hindus here, and so I'm the minister of them as well. And besides, when I indicated astonishment, he said, I've read Mike's favor. And at that point, I said, no, there's no translation of Mike's favor. And he said, well, somebody's explained to me this way. The point is that you can have a top-down notion of what you're supposed to do, and the important point is that it is very impolite to mention religious divisions. They exist for reasons of marriage. People who are of a certain age, which now includes me, can remember when there was a sharp division of where people lived in the country, but that's about it. If you're Baluch, from certain parts of Pakistan by origin, you play down ethnic identity now. If you're Diwati, which is another ethnic group in Oman, where at one time you wouldn't have claimed before the 1947 that you were Hyderabadis, you would play that down and somebody would discover that you really were Arabs who went to South Asia, forgot their Arabic, and then came back and rediscovered that they were Arabs after all. Yeah, sure. You can use history creatively when circumstances change. The community of Diwatia were given a choice in 1947. Either they could become citizens of India, or they could be citizens of the Sultanate of Muscat and Oman. The community made a very wise decision and chose to be citizens of Muscat and Oman, which gave them better life opportunities thereafter. They tended at that time to be more highly educated and everything else. My point here is that to be minority, whether by reason of religion or ethnicity, does not necessarily condemn one to be identified in that way alone. You have a major range of choices of what you can do. Let me tread on dangerous ground and look at the situation in Morocco, which again one needs to look at historically. Morocco has many languages. A number of them are now called Amazighi. There's a waiter in the Tangier restaurant who explained to me when newscasts in Morocco became very boring in the 1990s when King Hassan permitted what he used to call the Mahachat and Babaria, the Berber dialects. He started using the term. He would never call them language. He allowed newscasts to be given. And so I asked the Rifian waiter at one point, what do you think of those newscasts? And he said to me, well, one of the three newscasts speaks very good Rifian. The other two have trouble speaking Rifian because there was no overall sense of a Mazahia as a binding group. There was a sense of people united by language in a very difficult terrain and abetted by a government which at one time would machine gun them from helicopters when there were demonstrations early in the kingdom to acquire greater, to draw attention of the central government to the problems, regional problems. That's no longer the method used for educating people in citizenship in Morocco. But from a language barred in public places, one became very proud of the Berber cultural identity. Claims of political identities are something else, but the so-called civil war in Algeria of the 1990s persuaded the King of Morocco that perhaps he should have a very soft approach toward local languages and other things. The point is, there's an identity there. It's very hard to call Berbers or the Amazighia a minority because they may be a slight majority of the country, but the meanings of what it means to be an Arab or an Amazighi change politically very well and get managed by the various parties involved. To claim minority status often can be a political claim. I will maybe mention one word and not talk much about it. The Kurdish, now as in the past, has been a very interesting sort of identity. After World War I, the League of Nations promised everybody that they could have a nation based on a majority of people to give it ethnic identity, that helped a number of people in different places. It did not help Kurds. And how to talk about Kurds affects many different things, including how one talks about the notion of exiting violence. Let's go outside the Middle East for a moment to look at how minority status can change. Let's go to China, which we don't often think about. There's maybe, let's see if I can, I don't remember anything, but I did write it down. There's about 23 million Chinese who identify as Muslims. There are different groups, the Hui, the Uyghur, and so forth. The Uyghur who are in Xinjiang province are perhaps the ones having the roughest period of time, where the central government moves non-Muslims, non-Uyghur, into the area, which creates a number of land issues and everything else. But at the same time, the Chinese, at least since the 1980s or 90s, recognizes that this minority is a very good way of attracting foreign investment in parts of China. And this has accelerated in the last 4 years or so with the One Belt, One Road policy, where you can go to places like Yinchuan in what, in my geographic precision, I would call central China, something which is where you have a Hui majority, and you would see mosques which are like mosques in many parts of the Muslim world, structures that the Wahhabi missionaries or those trained in Saudi Arabia would very much not approve of, because they are also shrines with strong implantation of local senses of identity. The big battle for minorities in China right now is the use of the term halal to introduce halal food, because in Yinchuan, should you go out for a stroll late at night, you can even have a halal Heineken in a bar during Ramadan, and the restaurant will say that it's a halal restaurant. You can go in, as I would, and ask through an interpreter, excuse me, how can you call this a halal restaurant if you're serving Heineken in Ramadan? And you get an answer of sorts, where people don't like it, don't like talking about it, but you find things out. A halal restaurant would be a restaurant where you draw the curtains so nobody from outside can see people, Muslims, eating in the middle of the day if they choose to do so. A number of kind of local things. And you'll see shrines and other things. And again, with some people who want to see them more rigid, but you'd see non-Muslim merchants. Even, I've only heard about it, I haven't seen it, a restaurant in Yinchuan that would serve halal pork. The notion of halal has softened in China to mean food that's pure and not adulterated, not the sort of stuff for which food producers in China are known, which is adulterated baby milk or other things. The Muslims have a sense of integrity in the food of what they have and fiercely try to defend it. And the use of social media for people to talk about incursions against Muslims or Muslims taking too many privileges is a very active thing, because the central government tries in the best way it can to hold things. Well, the point is, once again, minority is a negotiated status, and it is vocally negotiated. One cannot extrapolate the Chinese use of halal food or halal restaurants in Yinchuan to other areas. That is a signal for me to very quickly, I think, mention a couple of other places. And I've simply mentioned, not list them. I don't think he's going to have much success. And therefore, I'm going to put the microphone closer to my mouth. Motions. Lebanon is, once again, a place of negotiated minorities in many different directions, from the publicly sustained myth that the representation in parliament of different Christian groups and Muslim groups is the same as that of the census of 1930. It is in the interests of most parties to maintain that, even while the situation has radically changed. Minority status often, in the past, but also in the present, has been sustained by foreign powers to given situations, and that continues. And again, the basis is minority status sometimes can be based upon self-ascription, and at other times by imposed senses of minority from above. Vichy France in Algeria defining who is a Jew and using the same language as was used in France and other areas controlled by the Third Reich would be a good, if ugly, example of a top-down approach. Or the way in which one would negotiate such identities in Iraq. I met once a deserter from the Iraqi army. This is before the Coalition of the Willing came into Iraq, who talked about how when he was a truck driver, he kept from being killed at a checkpoint in one part, where systematically you could see that the Sunni truck drivers who were stopped in the convoy were being taken out of their vehicles and stopped. He changed his identity paper, so instead of by just taking a dot from over an N, he put a dot under a noon in his name. So it went from, I don't remember exactly, from Janabi to something pronounced in a different way, because one subdivision of the tribe was Shia, and he got out alive. He decided that he was going to give up truck driving at that point and would take some other occupation, and then eventually to desert. The point is that if we can look just about anywhere we want in the Muslim world, and to ask whether radicalism is inherent in minority status is a question that really has to be looked at in a local way. And the answer, this helps a lot, I'm sure, is sometimes it can be a cause for radicalism. Armenian terrorists, for example, using violent means to express what they feel they have to express in other situations outside of in places where they've not been before. Sometimes it's the residue of other things. Joseph Stalin, liked assigning nationality to different ethnic groups. And Armenians were, through the 1930s at least, selected for working with the Soviet intelligence services, and so they would do a lot of the dirty work in Central Asia. There's a residue in some ways of that. The important thing is a sense of local history. I think of the difference. I don't think of Qasem Soleimani as an historian, the leader of the Revolutionary Guards, who has a very good sense of tribe, context, and religious groups in Iran and Syria. But it's the Americans I learned to slowly, and then onward, as people change, to understand tribal networks and the contours of who is connected with whom, which tribal woman has married somebody from Saudi Arabia and so forth, can be a way that one can effectively work in a dangerous and shifting terrain. The Iranians, with many fewer resources than the Americans, have been able to do quite well. And it would come as no surprise to learn that at certain periods, the Americans, including James Mattis, now one of the few senior people in our government, who has some sense of terrain, is negotiating who's minority and who's not enables one to do a lot more than you can do for drones or aerial reconnaissance. Okay, let me stop. My main point, again, is that by thinking of minorities, or for that matter, not spoken much about ideologies, radicalism, as something that is not fixed, but something that even if people claim they are fixed, is changing over time, and even as groups say they are not changing over time, is a very important part of trying to understand the highly elastic maps of how one can negotiate and try to figure out how one can exit violence. Thank you very much.